Thanks. I better have a glass of water. Thanks, David, very much for your very much abridged testimony. If you want to hear more of David's testimony, I'm sure I'd be happy to talk to you. And thanks, Janine, for doing that reading. And it's good to see Alison here today. Alison, I hope your ankle's feeling better. I have this sort of picture in my mind quite often about plates spinning. When you're talking to people sometimes and they're doing too many things, you say, how many plates do you have spinning? And I often think of God and think about how many plates he has spinning. And, you know, he's a bit better than we are. And just can you imagine how many things he's managing because he is our creator? Jonah is really sort of addressing two plates that God has spinning. One plate is his whole meta-narrative, or just the big picture of his plan and where he's taking it, where it's going. His plan is just unfolding, and it's to save mankind. And so it unfolds, and we're just at a section in history where God is asking Jonah to be a messenger, a minister, a servant, and he has Jonah's plate spinning as well, and he needs Jonah to fit into his overall plan. And as we can see, Jonah appears to be a little bit reluctant, but then aren't we all? And so this second chapter of Jonah is what we're going to study today, and Janine has read to it. I'm basically going to just talk about the verses bit by bit, and we'll work through the passage. Now, C.S. Lewis made this quote, and I've got it shortened there, but it's from the book A Problem in Pain. He says, we can ignore even pleasure, but pain insists upon being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts at us in our pains. And if you have been through a painful experience, as David has been, in God's hands, then you will know that he is really shouting at times in your life and has been in mine as well. So I can relate to this passage very much. Now, as I thought about Jonah, this prayer in chapter 2 is written in the form of a psalm. I mean, we could easily find that, this passage, it's Hebrew poetry, in the Psalms. But I guess it's not, because it's specific to Jonah. And so it remains in the passage. But what is so interesting as well is that when you read the whole book of Jonah, it's told by a narrator. And we assume it's Jonah, but it's told in the third person. And so Jonah did this, God did this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it goes all through the psalm, except for here. And here, when Jonah starts to pray, Jonah goes to the first person. And he is sharing with us, the audience, the things that he told God and thought through with God. And I find it interesting because it seems that he probably didn't pray this prayer in the stomach of a fish. I mean, it would have been very difficult. But what is fascinating about Jonah's prayer is, as you go through it, there are many references that have been stolen from the Psalms. Now, Jonah would have been exposed to the Psalms. The Psalms had been written for many years. King David was, you know, as a shepherd boy, was writing these Hebrew poems. And so as Jonah had been, one would assume, exposed to this, Jonah's in the middle of a fish and he's recalling these various psalms which have high significance to his experience. Again, as Christians, if we know God's word and we've been learning it, then these things come to mind when we're going through difficult times. And so I thought a little bit further, and I thought, you know, if it's a psalm, well, it can be sung. And so what if we made some music for it? You know, if we composed some music, and, you know, I was thinking of the old-time silent movies. You'd remember them, Alex, wouldn't you? And
I remember them.
Oh, right. Oh, thanks, Jono. Yeah, appreciate that. But you would have seen a movie, I would assume, that showed Laurel and Hardy or somebody, and then someone down beneath the movie, you know, sort of playing a piano or with all these ding-dongs or maybe a big pipe organ, you know, going in the background, sort of giving the mood music to support what was going on in the movie. And I just thought, well, you know, what is Jonah's prayer worthy of? What sort of music? And being a sort of a classical music type of appreciator, I thought, you know, we could actually write a classical piece to this with, you know, strings and wind, woodwind, and we might even need a bit of timpani, you know, and we'd have to get Daniel out here with his foot thing, you know, to go. And so I thought we'd talk about this in terms of what, say, we're writing music for it, and we'll use the typical process or structure that somebody writing a classical symphony or an oratorio or something like that would write. And you basically, a classical piece starts with this overture. It's the bit at the beginning. And even the modern day musicals, the overture as it plays, what it does is it shows the themes that appeared. It just introduces the themes. You watch Star Wars and even those sorts of things. The themes are introduced in that particular point. And so with classical music, that is the case. And so as we look at this chapter, let's see what the overture is, and we'll move on from that particular position. So the overture, as I've said, needs to intertwine the themes. And there's a couple of things that are introduced to us here in the terms of God's plate spinning. And in chapter 1 and verse 17, it says, "Now the Lord had arranged for a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and 3 nights." Notice that's third person. It's saying literally what happened in the story. Now, last week, Jono introduced us to the fact that the weather was really bad, and Brad has mentioned the bad weather and the circumstances that were there in chapter 1. But this week, we see God not just in control of the weather, but we see him in control of a very large animal, a fish, and also in control of a very reluctant man, Jonah. And so God is the creator and the sustainer, and we really do need to recognise that, you know. We're his creation, and so man is created and needy, but God is the creator and mighty and able. And so when we get into chapter 2 and verse 1, we've still got the narrator. He says, "Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from inside the fish." Now, what happened? Well, the second part of the themes that are being shown here, so we've got the theme about God and his creation and that sort of thing being expressed, and then we go into this second part, Jonah's distress and its resolution. And it's interesting that this is a summary statement of the rest of the prayer. Jonah gives a summary, and it gives an indication of what type of psalm or what type of prayer it's going to be. Because in verse 2, chapter 2 and verse 2, he says, "I cried out." You know, listen, guys, this is my personal experience, and I'd like to share it with you now. "I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble." Is that true, David? "I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble, and he answered me." Is that true, David? Yep. "And he answered me. I called to you from the land of the dead." That true? Maybe. Maybe not. "I called to you from the land of the dead, and Lord, you heard me." This is not a psalm of sadness or lament. It's a psalm of thanksgiving. This is written after the event. It's already saying what God had done for him and how he would like to thank him. So did he rescue you, David? He certainly did. And so many of us, all of us, many of us here can have that testimony and say, yes, these are the things that I have done in my life, and he rescued me. And so what comes from that, I will give thanks. Now, he doesn't say that there, but we see that for the rest of the psalm, his prayer, he's giving thanks. And so the cry from Jonah was, Lord, without you I'm lost. Lord, without you I'm lost. The very response that God was looking for, because God can shout at us in our pains or shout in our pains. And sometimes he's got to just take us by the ear and drag us along a bit for us to realise precisely what he's looking for us at this particular time in our life. And I'm assuming that as you're sitting there, if you already are a believer in Jesus, there have been times already where he's grabbed you by the ear and say, hey, you need to think about this a bit more than you do. The Christian life is not about fear, you know, it's about trust. And Jonah proves this. And so we come to the opening of this thing. We've done the overture. Now we get to the body of the work. And generally, there's a number of movements in the work, and it moves through. And the movements have different themes as they go. And so, if we're producing the music, we sort of need Phil here today with his guitar, you know, sort of strumming along at whatever we need here. But anyhow, so what sort of music would you write here? I mean, this is pretty dire circumstances for this poor old Jonah. And so I've got a little heading here. Here he is, he's sinking beneath the surface, you know, and so he describes his situation. And I put the heading here, he got what he deserved. Now, that's Brad's question. And it's interesting, even though the sailors did throw him into the water, this is not necessarily the answer to Brad's question, but even though the sailors did throw him into the water, he got them to throw him in, which they really didn't want to do either. But even though he got them to throw him in, he knew that the storm was his fault. He'd brought this problem because of his reluctance and disobedience. He'd brought it on the rest of the people who were in the boat, who really didn't deserve the storm. And yet they were suffering the consequences of Jonah's stupidity. And he's running away from God. And so, as far as Jonah was concerned, he got what he knew he deserved. He deserved death, to be honest. He got what he knew he deserved. Verse 3 in chapter 2, you threw me into the ocean depths, and I sank down to the heart of the sea. The mighty waters engulfed me. I was buried beneath your wild and stormy waves. I haven't ever drowned, but I would think, oh, this would be a terrible experience. You can't stay above the water. You're going under and you're going down. Now, it's at this point that he mentions a realisation that he has at this point, a conscious realisation, because he says, and notice, I just put this from the overture, from the introduction. He says in there, in his little summary, I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble. And then in verse 4 here he says, then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence. Yet I will look once more towards your holy temple. Now, there's a question there as to whether how he said that or why he said that. And if you want to talk about that, I'm happy to. The more recent Bible translators are changing that statement slightly, but the majority of Bible translations leave it at that case because it sort of says that, well, he still had faith, or it implies that he still had faith that he was going to talk to God in the temple. Now, it's fraught, and anyhow, just so you know, if you want to talk about it, there is an alternative. But the point that I want to make here that I believe is, I feel would be, is worth making at this particular point, that Jonah realises that life without fellowship with the Lord is... Now, how would you answer that question? If you're in this circumstance and God turns his back and throws you into the depths, how would you feel?
Hollow.
Hollow. out of fellowship. Yeah, I just wonder whether that's what's going on here, that Jonah realises he's now separated from God. He's thumbed his nose at God. And then he's saying, well, hang on, do I want to be out of fellowship with God? I'm a believer. I believe in God. I trust him. Do I want to be out of fellowship with God? I think there's a good little message there for us as Christians that when we are reluctant to serve God, when we are disobeying God in our lives because we want to go our own way, that what we're doing is we're cutting ourselves off from close relationship with God, or close friendship, or close fellowship. If I want to go my way in my own family and annoy it completely, well, I'm cutting myself off from the fellowship within the family. And so it makes for situations where it's not good, and potentially I can regret doing what I've done. And so we get this sense of regret from Jonah. Verse 4 again, then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence, yet I will look once more towards your holy temple. Now, that is where the Jewish people, the Hebrew people, that was where they saw God was located. Mind you, in Jonah's day, the temple's getting a bit knocked about. And so there's a, but that is where, and even today, that's where the Jews see God's presence should be, in the temple. And so that is one of their concerns. And so we know differently now because we have far more perspective on what has happened. So life without fellowship with the Lord, what is that? How is that for me, for you, and whatever? Now we get into the second movement of the body of the work, and it's getting a bit worse. You know, he's realised he's forfeited his fellowship with God, and now he's sinking towards the bottom. He's one breath away from forfeiting his life. And it's what he deserves, because if we're guilty before God, it's what we deserve. Sin pays its wage, death, says Paul later on. And so we are guilty before God because of our rebellion and our reluctance to bend the knee, if you like, to God. And so he says in verse 5, I sank beneath the waves and the waters closed over me. Seaweed wrapped itself around my head. Not nice. Not nice. I sank down to the very roots of the mountains. And I think we understand that we can see him in the valleys of the sea, where the mountains start to come up to form the land. And so there he is down there. And this is where he has another realization. And so he goes on and he says, and again, in the overture, we had, I call to you from the land of the dead. Now, that's the word Sheol in Hebrew. And so it's a description of the netherworld, the underworld, the place where when a body stops breathing, the spirit goes. And so from the Hebrew perspective, that's what he imagines, because he says, I sank down to the very roots of the mountains, and he goes on in verse 6b, I was imprisoned in the earth whose gates lock shut forever. And so he's just at this last breath and position of consciousness. And yet he sees himself as being already, his spirit has departed. And he thinks of the consequences of that. And so, what's his realization? Well, that death outside of relationship with the Lord is. Now, have we thought about that? Thought about what death outside of having a relationship with God, what the consequences are for that. And as Christians who know where we stand before God before we receive the acceptance of Jesus into our lives, that's where we're going. Now imagine if that had happened to Jonah, I'm sure God would have used somebody else. But God didn't want that to happen to Jonah. He wanted to learn a lesson from it, and he wanted him to change. God didn't want David to take his life. He wanted him to change and become different. God did that. And so we go on, and so I don't know what sort of music you'd have for that, but it'd be pretty sad and somber and clashing with, you know, with waves and all the rest of it. Then we come to the second movement, and I've called that deliverance, because this the whole flavour of his psalm changes, his poem. So we could make the music a bit more upbeat. You know, everybody knows I really appreciate Handel's Messiah, and you think, what would Handel be writing for this, you know? Deliverance. Jonah got what he didn't deserve. And that's what mercy is. Jonah got what he didn't deserve. It's God reaching out, and so we see this. And again, it's summarised in the beginning of his prayer. And Lord, you heard me. Now, what did the Lord do? Now, the Lord had arranged for a great fish to swallow Jonah. Sorry, but I've had an irreverent thought there, and I thought, you know, God thought of Uber first. Here we've got Uber Drive with a submarine vehicle. But possibly we call it Uber Dive. Sorry, dad jokes. No, try and get back on track. Sorry, I've got to get serious again. It's terrible. So in verse 6b, he says, but you, O Lord my God, snatched me from the jaws of death. And I mean, that's where I imagine this fish takes Jonah. I could be wrong there, but Kyle and Delich support me, so that's all right. What made the difference? Now, what did make the difference? As my life was slipping away, I remembered the Lord, and my earnest prayer went out to you in your holy temple. So maybe that's where he got into the holy temple, but from a big distance, which is how we can get into the holy temple nowadays. And so here it's happening. My earnest prayer went out to you. What happened? What? Why? A genuine cry to the Lord for mercy will be honoured. And again, in our lives here, if we aren't believers in Jesus, a genuine cry to the Lord for mercy will be honoured. David, a genuine cry. I didn't believe in God. Actually, I've got to tell you a bit of his story, because he said if anybody mentioned God, you know, before he was a believer, he said, when I meet him, I'm going to give him this. And you think, God, you shouldn't have saved him. But there we go. I mean, that was his attitude. I think there's a few other people sitting in this room who felt the same before they became Christians. Philip? Yeah. And look what he's done in him. So, a genuine cry to help. Mercy will be honoured. And so God honours this, and the fish comes and takes Jonah and takes him away. So we get to the final movement of this piece of music, and I've labelled it dedication in verses 8 to 9. And Jonah, you know, sort of summarises his experience and how he comes to the conclusion about all of the things that had happened to him. God shouting in his pains, and this is his response. Those who worship false gods turn their backs on all God's mercies. So how is my lifestyle? Now, he's not just talking about, in the King James, it's actually vain glory, I think it is in the King James. And it's broader than just saying, oh, yeah, well, that person's an idol worshipper. It's just about being focused on things that are away from God's values and are in rebellion to God's values. I mean, Israel was in trouble simply because they worshipped false gods. And so they were two-timing God. I mean, God was the one they were supposed to be in love with, and here they sort of got a partnership on the side with idols, and that's literally why they got put out of the land. And Jonah's in this situation, which we'll hear later on from Rob and then Ben. So the empty futility of earthly pursuits is the issue that he sees here. He had his own opinions about why he shouldn't go and do what God wanted him to do, the empty futility of earthly pursuits. Now, we also see a natural response that a person makes when they understand God's mercy in their lives. He says, "But I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I will fulfil my vows." And so there is not a need, but a drive, if you like, when we become Christians, to worship God in appreciation for what he's done and to serve him because we want to please him, not because it's about fear and he'll belt us over the head, but because we want to, because we really appreciate all that he has done for us. We appreciate the depth of the cost of providing this for us. And Jonah sums it up for us. What's the only way? The singular source of salvation for all mankind. For my salvation comes from the Lord alone. For my salvation comes from the Lord alone. And well, it's the only answer really, isn't it? Now, what is fascinating in this passage, we get out of the first person and go back to the third person, and the narrator takes over again, and in verse 10, we get what happens. And so Uber Dive becomes Uber Eats, and then Uber delivers on time and in the right place. What more could you want? And so I had thought about this before, just wondered, but I thought, oh no, I'll chuck it in there. So there's an encore, as you would often get at some classical symphony, you know. There's an encore, and it's been so good and so amazing. Let's get this guy back out again to just present it a little bit more, you know, and just so you can tickle the keys or whatever he's doing. And so in the encore, Jonah actually gets more. He gets more than he deserved, because he receives grace. And this is the whole thing about David. David just didn't receive mercy. He didn't just have his sins forgiven and forgotten, but David was given a ministry to do, and he came out here today and he did it. And so Jonah was not only shown mercy, but he was shown grace. Now, grace is not free, it costs. To extend grace to somebody is to reinstate them to the position they originally had. Now, that's only one definition of grace, but in contrast or in comparison with mercy, I like it. So mercy forgives, but grace forgives and reinstates. It's worth thinking about. I didn't make those lines up. I read them, and I tried to find where I read them, and I couldn't. So I'm not sure who it was that wrote that. Then the Lord ordered the fish to spit Jonah out on the beach. Grace forgives. Grace forgives and reinstates. Now, this is not on the slide, but it's just a summary of what I've gone through with this psalm or prayer or musical presentation of Jonah's reflection on what had happened to him. And so I'm asking the question, why are we reluctant? Why are we reluctant to bend the knee to God? Why are we reluctant? Why do we go in the opposite direction, whether believers or not believers? it's sort of about a sense of autonomy and wanting to be in charge of our own lives. And maybe I've just got two points here that I want to make, is that because we believe God can't be trusted. You know, God's done things and you think, no, he shouldn't have done them, and how could he do that? That's just stupid, you know. Why, you know, is it because God can't be trusted? And there's a whole reason. He doesn't come up to our expectations. You think, what? God doesn't come up to my expectations. J.B. Phillips said that, I think, didn't he, that God makes, a man makes God in his own image. And it's so true. We do. And we shouldn't. Or in Jonah's case, was he reluctant because he'd been called to minister to the undeserving? And that's an interesting comment on ministry as well. You know, do I not do something because I haven't been called to the ministry of the undeserving? And yet that's what Jesus came to do, to minister to the undeserving. And that's what God's heart is. And we peep into these passages, this book of Jonah, and we see God's heart out on his sleeve and on display with the way that he's behaving with Jonah and with people who are pagans, the sailors. And we'll hear more in the next couple of chapters. So Jonah, as God grabs him by the ear, shouting in his pain, his traumatic circumstances forced him to decide that he didn't want life without fellowship with the Lord. And so that's a challenge for me today. You know, how am I living as a Christian? Am I just being a bit reluctant in a few areas? And how's that affecting my relationship with him? Just my friendship. I haven't lost my salvation or anything. It's just affecting how I'm fellowshipping with him. And it's the case in a Christian community. How am I fellowshipping with everybody here, you know? Maybe there's some people who are undeserving, so I... And then more seriously, for people who aren't yet believers and who are here and are just searching, death outside of relationship with the Lord. I said earlier that sin pays, well, I didn't, Paul said it, but sin pays its wage, death. And that's very serious. And we have only this life where we have breath in our bodies, and our bodies are still living and working to make that decision. And for Jonah, it was going to be too late. And he said, I can't be without this. And so, almost instinctively, because of his exposure to God's values, he makes that decision. A genuine cry to the Lord for mercy will be honoured. The Lord saved him. And that also, the Lord reinstated him, as he did with Peter, and said, I've got a ministry for you, mate. When you're converted, strengthen your brethren. And so, as we finish, what did Jonah do? He was in trouble, like David. I called for help, like David. He rescued me, like David. I will give thanks, like David. And so what a brilliant example of what it means for somebody to become, to know God. So the ball is in our court. And as far as the next two chapters of Jonah is concerned, the ball is in Jonah's court. And so we'll find out how he manages his return of status and return of ministry. And God moves the plate on both of them. So we're going to just have a song, but we will also follow the song with communion. And Angus, if you can just throw the slide up for communion before we say goodbye to everybody online. Those are some verses that I I would like us, it'll come up later, but just to think about, I mean, some of you who know your Bibles will be knowing that there's things that I've left out here, which are quite significant. And so there's the words of Jesus up there in that first verse when he's talking to some people who are religious leaders. And this is what he says to his disciples when some Gentiles wanted to come and talk to him, some Greeks wanted to come and talk to him, and so he says that. And then later on in Acts, Peter says this, salvation is found in no one else, for there is no name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. Right, Angus, that can go off, thanks Angus, and just bring it on later. So goodbye to you guys who have been online. You appreciate the fact that you've joined us in your pyjamas. And so we'll, if you would like to worship, then you do that in your homes. And so after this song, we'll just have open worship. Now, well, I may as well just make that announcement as well, but we'll just, whoever in the community would like to pray or share a thought or read a word or sing a song or something, we'll spend some time doing that. And after that, when the communion goes out, please, if you're a believer in Jesus and you would like to partake even as a visitor, you're very welcome to do that. And so the bread will go around. Just take your piece of bread and reflect on these verses and take it. And then, but when the wine cups come around, well, we'll hold the wine cups and share them with each other at the end. Thank you.